Welcome to Sourcing Enterprise AI, a podcast by Upper Edge, a leading IT sourcing, negotiation, and project execution advisory firm. I'm John Belden, Chief Strategy and Research Officer.
And I'm Kylie Chisholm, Upper Edge's Content Marketing Manager. Join us every other week as we explore the impact of artificial intelligence and the critical issues IT decision makers and sourcing professionals will face.
The AI market is just in its infancy with new capabilities, new vendors, and a new competitive landscape and a boatload of risk. In each episode, we'll do a deep dive into a particular AI topic and explore the latest news releases and their potential impact on the market.
Empower your AI decision-making with vendor insights and fact-based sourcing strategies. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.
Hey, John, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic.
That's good to hear. We're recording on a Thursday, so the weekend's just around the corner. But before we go on our weekend, we have a lot to talk about in this episode. I think this is pretty unique for a Sourcing Enterprise AI episode. We haven't really done one that just sort of goes through some of the most recent news. We try to keep like themes in each of our episodes. But this week, we really wanted to just go through what we're seeing in the news right now, the sort of big, interesting headlines that our audience needs to know and needs to be aware of. And we're going to go through those. We have sort of three categories. We lumped it into products, litigation and legislation, and services. So these are all things that we've talked about on the show before, but now we're giving you the current events. Here's what you need to know at the end of Q1, beginning of Q2, 2024.
Yep. And I think we've got some very interesting news. And I think we've got some numbers that might surprise some people as we go through this process today.
Yeah. So let's just jump right in and get into the first piece of news. So like I said, we're going to start with sort of product news. So I know you had some stuff to talk about with NVIDIA and their recent conference. So could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So let's I want to focus on, as you mentioned, they had a recent conference or called their GTC, and it was focused on obviously on artificial intelligence. And Jensen Huang, the CEO, made some interesting announcements that I think might be relevant. You know, the first thing he talked about was the introduction of a new chipset that would be that NVIDIA would putting out that would be coming out in late 2024. And one of the things that he discussed was the, I'll call it the speed improvement that he expected to get out of that chipset. Now, he quoted a lot of numbers. There was 30X, 25X, et cetera. I think the one that I gravitated to was just there was a 4X number, meaning that they were going to be able to process at least four times the current processing power of their chipset. And so that's an interesting number. But probably more importantly, one of the things that he talked about was the transition from general purpose chips, which tend to be the thing that sits in everybody's PC, right? Mm-hmm. Just the general purpose chips. The transition in the overall marketplace from general purpose chips to accelerated computing chips, the kind of chips that NVIDIA produces. And one of the things he talked about was he believed that that acceleration or that movement to that chip was going to be a $250 billion a year opportunity for NVIDIA to take on that kind of capabilities. And if you just kind of think about what that means holistically, this is almost the equivalent of the, I'll call it the entry of the internet computing or the web computing. Everybody's computers are going to end up being capable, right, of processing AI in the next 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm. right? And there's going to be a massive shift of that computing power that's coming from the back engines to kind of your desktop. But you can see that coming again. And part of what it did for me is it says, you know, it's making the chip suppliers, it's making chip supply to be sexy again. Okay. It used to be the commodity, right? This is okay, make chips and everybody went. Now we're seeing those chips come back into vogue, right? And the scarcity of the chip. So that was kind of the thing that struck me out of that conference, at least the keynote. The next thing that struck me was he talked about the introduction of NVIDIA microservices. So as essentially NVIDIA beginning to move more into the software business rather than the chip business, right? And specifically in the AI area of those services allowing you to optimize the performance of your LLMs, right? In other words, run them, let's call it cheaper, right? Whether it be on-prem or in the cloud. So we're seeing a little bit about what we predicted there in terms of the crossover of vendors beginning to encroach on other people's spaces. Mm-hmm. The other thing that he talked about that, you know, for me was I'm going to call it more scary than anything else, was the concept of training LLMs. And today, the training of these large language models is largely done by data. So you're taking a lot of, you know, scraping the web and you're pushing all that into the LLMs. What he talked about in the future and currently what's happening today is, at least at NVIDIA, is they're training their models using other models to talk to each other, right? Mm-hmm. So the LLMs are beginning to train, I'll call it, to train each other's. And that obviously what it allows you to do is it allows you to build these LLMs a lot faster, right? And become more comprehensive. But in the back of my mind, I started to at least ask myself the question, if everybody is using everybody else's models to train their own new models, doesn't that create more of a commodity where there's no differentiation between the actual LLMs, right? And then it becomes, yeah, I'll call it a tuning game. But just this concept of LLMs talking to other LLMs and training each other just gives you, you can almost envision kind of the next layer now of growth within that space of saying it's coming and it's coming like a freight train.
Interesting. And we were just having that conversation of, you know, companies sort of piggybacking off of other companies' R&D and their efforts to make their lives easier. And so it sounds like that exact same thing is happening, but with LLM. So that's very interesting.
I think the terminology they use is something that's called reinforcement learning. So it's like I'm building my own LLM and then I'm accessing other LLMs to reinforce or supplement what's been embedded in mine. So that's a term to kind of put your ear out there and say, if you hear the term reinforcement learning, think about it as LLMs training LLMs.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how companies start to try to differentiate themselves, to your point, so that they can offer something unique to customers that other LLMs can't offer because they're feeding off of each other. All right, so moving away from NVIDIA and into Oracle. Oracle just had earnings released, and AI was a huge topic, as it is for a lot of vendors. So do you want to speak a little bit to what we learned from that?
Yeah, on the call, I'm going to focus primarily on some of the stuff that Larry Ellison said during the call. Mm-hmm. One of the things that, you know, that's always interesting to me on the Oracle calls is Oracle has a tendency to lead with all of the customers that they're signing and all the deals that they've done, right? You know, kind of, I'll call it genning up the market through their conference calls of making sure that everybody knows who I'm doing business with. One of the interesting facts that Larry threw out there that really got my ears perked up was he mentioned, I'm going to use the term OCI, which is Oracle Cloud Infrastructure. So think about this as the stuff that Oracle sells to enable businesses to operate in the cloud and the cloud infrastructure that goes on that. What Larry said is they've sold 40 Oracle Cloud deals that are over $1 billion that have not come online yet, meaning that they're not necessarily available for people to be using. But just think about that concept of $40 billion deals. Likely, those deals were made to the big gen AI vendors, right? So we're talking about they're doing deals with, you know, maybe they're doing deals with IBM, or maybe they're doing deals with Accenture, or maybe they're doing deals. It's probably not deals that they're doing with industry. It's probably deals that they're doing with, I'll call it the AI specifics. Yeah. But if you think about that concept of it hasn't gone online yet, right? That means that that availability is coming soon, right? Mm-hmm. And so we should expect to see an explosion of capabilities within the marketplace as Oracle comes online with those capabilities. The other thing that he said that I thought was really interesting was that they are re-engineering their apps. Let's think about Oracle Fusion, the ERP product, right? But they're embedding AI capabilities like other vendors are, mm-hmm. with the focus of specific industries. So in the case of Oracle, they targeted healthcare as a place that they're going to go with that, right? And that they're going to. Now, while he didn't say this in the earnings call, one of the other things that we did have seen on Oracle is in for their NetSuite product, which is a smaller ERP space. Mm-hmm. They're going to market with AI capabilities, but they're going to market with AI capabilities and saying it's free, right? So they are not going to market saying, like SAP saying, oh, by the way, if you want these AI capabilities, it's going to be a different price. Mm-hmm. They're going to market saying, if you buy NetSuite, you get these things for free. It's the same price as what our old product was. So they're going to put tremendous pressure on their competition associated with, I'll call it, going to market with Gen AI. Now, it was one of the things that we, Upper Edge, actually anticipated that Oracle would be doing. And the reason that we anticipated that was Oracle has the full stack, meaning they can go all the way from the application side, right, like their NetSuite product, down mm-hmm. through the cloud, right, down all the way to the actual chipset. So Oracle owns the stack. And because they own the stack, there's not necessarily somebody that's trying to make a profit at each component along that stack. So Oracle can look at the entire thing and say, you know what, I'm going to go to Gen AI. I'm going to make my money, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put a lot of pressure on my clients because I can go to market with capabilities that don't cost me anything because I already have them. Right. And so to me, that was an interesting play by Oracle to say, how am I going to put pressure on the marketplace with no pricing, essentially not pricing, but no pricing on the NetSuite product?
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, especially knowing that we've talked a lot about like Microsoft Copilot, for example, and the like tremendous price uplifts that we're seeing with that for Oracle to then sweep in and say, we can give it to you for nothing. It's from the customer's shoes, it feels like a no-brainer.
Well, it makes it kind of puts you in a position to take another look at Oracle, right?
And definitely encourage listeners to listen to our Copilot episodes, because a big thing we talked about there is that Microsoft is saying they're not going to provide discounting for Copilot. And this, to your point, puts them in the position of absolutely having to give you discounting. So if you are still looking at Microsoft, leverage that. So yeah, leading into the second category, so litigation and legislation, something that we love to talk about on this podcast. Speaking of Copilot, we have some news from the U.S. government on Microsoft. So do you want to dive deep into that?
Yeah, one of the articles that we uncovered this week was the U.S. House of Representatives, or let's call it the legislature, is banning the use of Microsoft Copilot and the free version of ChatGPT, with the logic or the reason is being they're concerned about leaking data, mm-hmm. and they've effectively just taken it out of the, not even making the capabilities actually available to their people. Which I thought that was really, really interesting, right? From the standpoint of, Well, number one, obviously, it's going to put some pressure on Microsoft right now, because now, you know, with the U.S. government saying, right, we can't use it because we are concerned about security. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of companies out there that are going to look just at that signal and say, well, if it's not safe enough for the government, it certainly can't be safe enough for us, right? And so that's going to put some pressure on Microsoft now to respond, obviously, to what the government did, not necessarily because they want to sell the government the tools, but the implications mm-hmm. associated with the U.S. government saying, it's not good enough for me. How does that actually suppress the rest of the market?
Yeah. Right.
So I think Microsoft's ultimately going to have to deal with that. Microsoft has said, oh, we're going to come out with some tools that are targeted specifically at the government, right? So that you can use these tools. But I think I think it's going to suppress, you know, a small amount, it's going to suppress a small amount that I'll call it the penetration that Microsoft might get. But for our clients, right, it certainly is a leverage point to be able to say, well, Microsoft, I'm really not sure if we should be exploiting these things right now, because look, the government's saying it's not safe to use this. You're going to have to convince me that it's safe, and or you're going to have to give me some sort of a discount for me to accept that risk that I'm taking. Right.
Yeah.
To bring this product into that space. So I think Microsoft's going to quickly address it, but it does set up, at least from my standpoint, kind of a short term play with Microsoft to say, not sure we're ready for this because there's too much risk.
Yeah. And I mean, lumping in the Oracle argument as well, that's some decent ammo to bring to the negotiation table if you're a Microsoft customer still interested in Copilot. So don't let them telling you that they're only doing list price scare you away from actually asking for that discounting, because I think they can definitely achieve it with all of this leverage. So we're going to take a quick pause for a commercial break, and then we will come back and talk a little bit about a law that the EU just passed.
Did you know that UpperEdge offers subscription advisory services? This on-demand solution provides essential benchmarks and market insights specific to your business needs precisely when you need it, empowering you and your team to make informed decisions for your IT initiatives. Position your team for success. Reach out today via the link in the show notes to learn more.
So we're back, and I do want to get into the EU's law passing. We've talked a lot about the EU on this podcast before and sort of the legislation, keeping an eye on them. So I'm very interested to hear more about what's going on that front.
Yeah. So I spent some time reading the elements of the law for the EU that they passed on AI. And, you know, my general conclusion on that is AI is scary. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because they essentially, I'm going to call it, outlawed certain kinds of AI. And they said these are illegal. AI that exploits the vulnerabilities associated with age, as an example, right? Mm. Age discrimination. You can't be writing AI packages that take advantage of people like me, old guys, right? You know, that may think a different way. They're banning AI associated with what they refer to as biometric categorization, which is you can't build a racist AI system. Mm-hmm. They're eliminating what they refer to as social scoring or profiling, right? That you can't use AI in order to be able to do crime profiling, to be able to say who might have committed this crime, which is kind of interesting, right? From that standpoint. They've also outlawed compiling facial recognition, so capturing a whole bunch of people's faces to do that, and outlawing building AI that uses facial recognition in the workplace, right, or emotion recognition in the workplace to determine how they should be managing people. So we're talking to each other right now, right, on our cameras. Imagine if AI was capturing these images as we were going through this meeting, right, or you're having a meeting, and based upon looking at the facial recognition or what's going on with the emotions of the person on the other end, the AI was capturing that and feeding to you through another window. what it is that you're the person that you're talking to might be thinking based upon capturing their facial recognition, right? Or their or their emotions, right? Yeah. That's where I said AI is scary, because if they're outlawing it, well, then somebody must have built the darn thing to begin with in the first place for them to be able to recognize it, that it's outlawed. Yeah. Right. So that was kind of my first take on this, is AI is scary. They also mandated that if you are in law enforcement and you want to use AI to use facial recognition to identify a particular suspect, or use some of these, I'll call it these tools, that you needed to get the equivalent of what would be like a warrant for a wiretap. So the kind of the concept of, they're not saying that you can't use these tools, but you can only use the tools when justified by some sort of a particular situation. So that was embedded within the law that I found to be pretty interesting. The other thing that I took out of interest was requirements for the creation of general purpose AI. So kind of the general stuff that's out there in the market. So think about ChatGPT, et cetera, those kind of tools. And what they're saying within the law, and the law needs to be implemented, I think, within 12 months or so, right? But they put out requirements for the vendors of these types of products to say, you need to make available your training and testing process. You need to make information available to anybody who might be using your tools to embed in their tools downstream documentation. They said that you had to have a policy in place for copyright, right? And what your process was for copyright. And you had to have some sort of a additional, I'll call it, sufficiently detailed summary about what the content that was used to train your I'll call it your L or their LLMs. Mm-hmm. And what I thought was really interesting in this is they're establishing through law of products that might go out into the marketplace, right? A set of standards that need to be followed to take those products to market. Mm-hmm. And where this might be useful to our clients and procurement people, right, is there's nothing that says that they can't use those same standards now for when they go out to purchase LLMs, or they go out to Accenture or Deloitte or somebody to build an LLM and then use that as a foundation for evaluating what are those services that are being provided to them, or what are those LLMs that are being provided to them, right? And you don't have to necessarily be an expert on it. You can simply say something to the effect of, right? Oh, I understand that you are providing these services, or you want to provide these services to me. How do these services stack up against the recent European law, right, that was passed on AI? And does your product meet those standards? And you don't even have to know anything about what the standards are, because now you put the burden on them, right, to go find out what those standards are and come back to you and say that, yes, it's in compliance, right? So effectively, what the EU has done is created another leverage point for the clients to be able to say, to gain assurances that the products that they are being sold, right, at least meet a certain standard, which I thought was, I thought that was kind of very interesting to be a way to think about that particular law, right? It doesn't apply to me, but that doesn't mean that you can't use it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's literally giving you your evaluation criteria on a silver platter.
Yeah. At least for understanding, at least one level of the evaluation criteria, right? Yeah.
The sort of baseline, how you weed out the first round of candidates is
right.
It needs to meet this standard. Okay, so we are going to move into the services bucket, and we're going back to another earnings call, this time Accenture's earnings. So do you want to talk a little bit about what they said in those recent reports?
Yeah, so Accenture, and I'm going to focus again on the CEO's take on things, Julie Sweetin. Mm-hmm. Couple of things, right? Accenture has gone through the process and you know, they made a big deal of saying, hey, we've got $1 billion worth of bookings in our AI services. And we've got now 53,000 people trained on AI, et cetera. However, right, I'm going to say, however, Accenture's earnings and revenue remained flat and didn't necessarily meet expectations. And one of the questions that she was asked by one of the analysts was, how is AI impacting their already existing bookings, meaning deals that they had done a year ago or 2 years ago? And she, I'm going to say, completely dodged the question, right? And she dodged the question primarily, and again, I don't have any insights into exactly why she does the question, so I'm gonna purely speculate here. But my speculation is this: there's two really big dynamics now related to generative AI that are happening. Number one is companies in their own internal IT departments that have implemented generative AI in support of development of code, in support of testing, in support of their general development practices, okay, are realizing significant benefits. And to the point where it was in a Wall Street Journal article, one of the CIOs that was quoted, I think, from Nationwide in that CIO article stated that they've seen a 20% reduction in the number of contractors that they need as a result of their own internal productivity. So let's just kind of pull that out there as a number, 20% reduction. Mm-hmm. Simultaneously with Accenture and Deloitte and these other firms implementing Gen AI for services, they also, you would assume, can be 20% more efficient. So now let's combine these two things together. My customers need less, and it's going to cost me. I need to apply less in order to be able to serve the market. All of a sudden, what we have now is the beginnings of a glut of inventory now, because where I used to have 100,000 people, now maybe I only have the demand for 90,000 people. That means I got 10,000 people that I'm sitting on right now that might be on the bench. Mm-hmm. My speculation is that Julie is not talking about that, right? That says, oh, our true demand is down. She used another factor to say, oh, companies are actually spending their money on software. They're not spending it on, they're making the choice to spend it on software rather than to spend it on services, right? I would argue truly that the demand is down for services as a result of those two functions. And I think it's a perfect time for our clients, right, to recognize that there may be a 12 to 18 month inflection point here where the demand for these kind of services in general is down. I believe it's going to ramp back up because remember, we talked about at the very beginning, there's you know, 40 deals that Microsoft or that Oracle's got on new capabilities coming online, and all these guys are bringing their products to market. Eventually, the demand for the new products is going to create the demand for the services on these vendors. But there's a short period of time where all of these vendors are going to be saying, I need to keep my bench active. And you may be able to actually negotiate some price breaks here in the short term as a result of the availability of, I'll call it, this capacity that's sitting in the marketplace right now. So, yeah. You know, I'm trying to, I'll call it, weave through the messaging here. But I thought that was very interesting that she completely dodged the question on the past bookings, because I think probably what's happening is clients are going back to Accenture. They are saying, hey, you've implemented AI, or we've implemented AI. We are not going to need those services anymore. And she was not going to say to the marketplace, oh, our clients are putting pressure on us to reduce those past bookings, because that would have signaled an even bigger hit on their stock price than they took as a result of the, I'll call it, their financial services being, or their services being flat.
There's more to be said in the things that she didn't say.
Exactly. You know, so she completely dodged the question there. So I thought that was very interesting on that dodge.
Yeah. And to your point, it'll be interesting to look over this next, 18 month roughly period to see how that sort of fluctuates and where Accenture especially stands at the end of it.
You know, I referenced an article in the Wall Street Journal that I think his name is Jim Fowler, the CIO of Nationwide. But there was another one of our former clients that was quoted in that article, Mark Kermish. I think he works for International Harvester right now. Mm-hmm. But when I read the Wall Street Journal article, I would swear to you that they must have listened to our podcast from about 3 months ago in order to be able to talk about all the things that they're talking about in terms of where companies are actually getting the savings from that. Now, whether they listened to the podcast or not, I thought I was reading some of the things verbatim though, when I was reading the article the other day.
We'll definitely make sure to link that below and link the episode that we did, because that's, if anyone from the Wall Street Journal is listening and wants to chat with us on this podcast, that would be great. Well, thank you so much, John. I think this was a really great way to sort of, again, close out Q1, start Q2, get a nice roundup of what's most pressing in the news stream right now. Like a lot of the stuff we talk about, I think there's room for a lot of follow-up when it comes to this. AI is just constantly evolving. The market is constantly evolving. So we'll definitely make sure as we learn more to point out where there's been developments. But I know I found this to be a very interesting and helpful conversation, so I hope our listeners did as well.
Sourcing Enterprise AI is co-hosted by John Belden and Kylie Chisholm and produced by Mike Brown. The podcast is brought to you by UpperEdge, a leading IT sourcing, negotiation, and project execution advisory firm. Make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss a new episode. For more innovative IT sourcing and risk mitigation insights, subscribe to the UpperEdge newsletter and follow UpperEdge on social media at the links in our episode description. Thank you for listening.